There is more going on than you know. There are unseen universal forces at work. The law of attraction is just one universal law that plays a part in shaping your reality. But there's so much more to know. If you knew how to engage all the universal forces, you could deliberately create the life of your dreams. Joshua, a group of non-physical teachers, explains the laws of the universe and how the mechanisms of physical reality actually work. They are channeled by Gary Temple Bodley, and each week, Gary and a group of students discuss how they are affecting and enhancing their lives every single day. This is the expansion of the law of attraction. This is the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. We're thrilled you're here.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 43 of the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. I'm your host, Gary Temple Bodley. Today is August 13th, 2016. This week we had a lot of people asking about their true selves. A lot of us can understand who we really are conceptually, and some of us can even see the difference between who we're being and who we really are. But today we're going to talk about bridging the gap between who we're being and who we really are. Just as a refresher, who you really are is an eternal and limitless being of pure positive love and acceptance. That's who everyone really is, and we'll go into more of that today. On the roundtable today, we have Steve Finizza. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary.
Michael Kudson. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Gary.
And Kyla Hinton. Hi, Kyla.
Hi, Gary.
It's great to see you guys together again. Saturday's always a fun day.
Yeah.
It's a great day.
Oh, you guys sound so enthusiastic.
Well,
it's really, a great day!
It's early for me, so.
I've been busy for hours, actually.
It's early for me, too, and it's 11 o'clock here. I barely made it.
I ran my son to the doctor this morning, so I've been up for
a long time. Yeah. Jeez. Okay. So let's start off this whole thing with the quote of the week, and then we'll start talking about who we really are, because that's always a good thing to know.
Okay. You guys ready?
Yep, we're ready for you.
We're ready.
Prepare yourself for this.
I'm ready. Get ready.
Okay. Timpani.
I am an explorer, and I choose to explore reality in my own unique way. Therefore, I know I cannot do wrong, be wrong, or get it wrong. Joshua.
Okay, there you go. What the hell does that mean?
Well, that sounds exciting to me. I'm an explorer.
Yep.
And no one else is exploring like I'm doing it.
It's not possible to explore reality like you're exploring it.
And I love the way I'm exploring reality. I'm very excited these days.
Mm-hmm. I am too.
It is. I love knowing that I cannot do wrong, be wrong, or get it wrong. Or I love being told that. I don't always know it.
I need to tell my wife there are moments I need to be reminded of it.
It's a great fallback position.
Yeah. Especially when someone's making you wrong, then you can always show them this quote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when they tell me I'm wrong, what do I do?
You can't argue with infinite intelligence, and that's where that
there
you're
we go.
You're seeing me from a very limited perspective. that's your whole problem. Yep. So I'm an explorer. So I came to physical reality. I chose my parents, the time and place of my birth, my body, because it would launch me on the trajectory towards what I came here to explore. So apparently I came here to explore the infinite, right? The reality behind reality, the mechanism of physical reality, the powers of the universe, how universal forces work to shape this reality that we find ourselves in. That's sort of what we're all exploring right here. If you're listening to this podcast, you came here to explore this thing. You wouldn't be interested in this if this wasn't one of the things you came here to explore. I also came here to explore poker and cooking and stuff like that too. So there's a lot of things I came to explore, but right now the main focus is this idea that we can create our own reality within the system as long as we play within the rules of the system, and that's what we're exploring right now.
The rules, the law.
Yeah, and it's getting clearer and clearer to me that the approach to life that we live in Western society, where we have to get out and do things and be productive and try and achieve whatever society thinks is good for us to achieve, and then be happy when it's all done, is the backwards way of doing it.
Yeah,
it's making more sense to me now that the natural way that works within this reality is that we work on feeling good as much as we can, doing whatever makes us happy, because we came here to explore reality in a unique way, not the way everyone else is doing it, our own way. And by thinking that someone else's way is better than our way, we get off our path of exploring our own stuff that we want to explore, and that we utilize these forces to bring us to receive what we want rather than going out and chasing it down and competing to get it.
This feeling good stuff is just seems like being lazy, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I'll share really quickly. Wendy's doing a one-on-one, and her question for Joshua this morning was she understands the difference between who she really is and who she's being, but she doesn't know how to get closer to to who she really is. And so Joshua said, for you specifically, and this probably applies to a lot of us, but for her, is to focus on feeling good. So if you think about that you're focused on feeling good, well, that means that you really can't concentrate on stuff you don't like, because that doesn't feel good. So you have to not watch the news, not be with people who irritate you, or you can't be around and still feel good, not to engage in gossip, and things like that. But Joshua also went on to say that if there's something you don't want to do, then you shouldn't do it, unless you'd feel guilty not doing it, because the guilt would probably feel worse than the doing of the thing you don't want to do.
Yeah.
But I think we need to all focus a lot on not feeling guilty and not, looking at things in a different perspective, so that we don't have these negative emotions about things, because negative emotion doesn't feel good.
And you're training yourself to step into your mind and kind of take control and say, hey, I'm going to tell you what you're going to be thinking about. I'm not just going to let you free flow. Oh, I'm thinking about this bad thing. I'm thinking about this good thing. You're saying, no, I'm going to steer you and kind of take charge of your monkey mind, or whatever you want to call it.
That is the most important thing.
Something I've been having a lot of fun with since starting the one-on-one. Joshua, I love the way they propose alternative perspectives when something seemingly bad is happening. Well, they say, well, maybe that's happening because of this, and they just make up all kinds of different stories. So I've been having fun with that, because I've been experiencing some contrast the past couple of days. So I've been trying to just imagine all the different ways this could be working out for me.
Right.
Right.
Because you can't see how this little stuff that seems to be going wrong is really getting you prepared for stuff that's going to go right.
Right. Here's an example. So yesterday in the morning, both my kids got up at 4 a.m. and I was less than pleased with that and was trying to figure out ways that could be good. And then I realized last night as I was driving back to Wichita 2.5 hours, because they'd gotten up so early, they both fell asleep like 15 minutes after we got in the car. So it was such a peaceful drive.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh,
it
was wonderful.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, well, my daughter had her second car accident in, like, say, 2.5 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And, both fender benders. So, of course, I was more than happy that no one got hurt, but less than happy that I had to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's forcing, as part of the process, it's forcing me to get the our 2005 Highlander fixed up. Mm. So, the positive way of looking at it in terms of what needed to get done here was that long deferred body work on the from various other kisses of the car with concrete.
So you're saying it runs in the family?
Are now being addressed.
It's a genetic thing.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's a New York thing. There's a reason a lot of New Yorkers don't drive, right?
Oh, I live in the suburbs, so we don't drive in the city. It's more of a car. The first time, I don't know if I said it on the show, the first time my daughter was pulling out very quickly She had my son in the car. My wife was coming home from work. My wife saw my daughter and was honking wildly. And my daughter and my son, for whatever reason, couldn't hear her. And the cars kissed. You know, lots of damage to both cars. And, you know, we were just in the process of getting, we got my wife's car fixed up, which is the more important car because she's got to get to work. We were going to eventually deal with the Highlander. And that's when my daughter kissed another car with it. So now there was no choice.
So basically, is the Highlander wanting to get itself fixed up?
It wanted a little TLC. It was feeling a little neglected.
Right. Cool. My parents were crazy. On Saturday morning, they wanted to sleep in. So they would set out two bags of candy in front of the TV. And whenever we got up, we would have this candy and then just be in this sugar rush, trying to be quiet, but not being able to be quiet. And so every Saturday morning, they came out and yelled at us for being too noisy. This entire life. And, you know, don't you see what you're doing here? And that was the only candy we got for the whole week. So we would wake up early just to get it, eat it all within 5 minutes, and then go crazy.
It's called Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
Really?
Whatever. I think that sounds like a great idea. I'm going to try that. Yeah.
Well, let's go on. This week we don't have a question of the week. We have a excerpt from the new Joshua Diet book. And in this part, it's from chapter 5, I think, and it's really sort of setting up how the universe works from beginning to end, sort of in a broad stroke of what's really going on here. So let's read that, and then we can talk about each section of that. Kylie, you want to read that?
Sure. All right. If you have read anything we have previously written, you have heard us say that you are as worthy as any who have ever or will ever live. You are exactly as worthy as anyone else on the planet. Your value is identical to everyone you know and everyone who exists right now. The fact that you are worthy means that you can have, be, and do anything you desire in this playground called physical reality.
Okay, so the most important thing that you have to understand, if anything's going to, you know, if you're going to create your own reality in a meaningful way and have an enhanced experience of life, is that you are worthy. Therefore, you can have, be, and do anything in this physical reality. Everything is here for you. You are self-contained. Everything you need is within you to do whatever you need to do. So that's like fact number one. You have to realize that not your neighbor, your parents, your boss, Donald Trump, no one's more worthy than you are.
Yeah.
You're as worthy as Donald Trump.
We're setting the bar a little low here, Gary.
Well, you just don't think you're as worthy as him. He thinks he's really worthy.
The key word I like in that paragraph is playground, that this is a playground for us. And that just I don't know how to say it.
Nothing serious is going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing, is just relax.
This is recess.
This is easy. Yeah.
Yes, it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be, well.
And it can be.
It can be, right.
Until the bully starts pushing you around on the monkey bars.
That's
well,
only if
the bully pushes
man.
You around. If the bully pushes you around, you need the bully. The bully can only be there because you need that experience.
And the bully loves you.
Yeah, you made a pact with the bully right before you went out to recess. Like, yeah, hey, exactly. Come me mm-hmm. up.
Yeah, come on, Bruno, bring it on.
All righty.
Okay. You are a unique expression of Source. You are here to explore reality from a unique perspective. No other person has ever or will ever perceive reality as you are perceiving it right now. You are completely and absolutely unique to all the universe. Your unique experience of life adds to the sum total of the universe, since each point of perspective is equally unique and all points of perspective are equally valid and valuable, one not more so than any other. Your complete and total uniqueness proves your worthiness and value to all that is.
It was interesting when I was a kid and learned that all snowflakes are unique. It seemed like such a strange concept. How could they be all unique? But everything in this reality is unique. Every leaf, even identical twins are unique because they're looking at life from a different perspective because they're looking at each other. Mm. And they have that relationship, which no one else has. Really interesting to think that.
So always, I said this at one of the first podcasts. I said, always remember you are unique just like everyone else.
Yeah. Exactly as unique as everyone else.
Yeah. But the paradox is then we're all not unique.
We're not uniquely unique.
We're uniformly unique, which
unique.
Yep. Don't feel special.
Oh my God, this is going to give me a headache.
But think about it. No one is ever was born when you were born at the place you were born with the parents you were born to and the body you were born with. No one had the events that happened to them in their lives the same way you did. Everyone was different, and that sort of shapes your perception of the world and how you are in it. Now, you could have been born into to a family that was loving and supportive and everything was fine. And that's one way to be launched on trajectory. Or you could have been born into a family where the parents fought and eventually got divorced and, sort of neglected you. And that's another way to look at reality. But neither way is better than the other way. They're both completely separate. And when you realize that you chose that way, either way, because it would launch you towards what you came here to explore, including your body too, which is a big part of the Joshua diet, is you chose your body, color of your skin, everything. It just makes sense that now you can look back on that and say, no, I don't wish that I had a different family, or I don't wish that things were better. All the stuff that happened got me to this place, and this is the perfect place to start on my exploration of what I wanted to explore. The only thing that people do is they use what may have been a problem in their childhood as an excuse not to do what they really want to do because they don't think they're worthy. So the first two things, you're worthy and you're unique.
All right.
So you have to know those two things, okay?
If you can birth a desire, you can achieve that desire. There's nothing more to it than that. Once you've birthed the desire, you will either allow it to come to you or resist it. Once you birth a desire, the universe finds a way to bring it to you. If you allow it to come by going with the flow and not fighting against things, it will come. If you are constantly arguing with the conditions, you are resisting what you want. Keep going.
Nope, this was an important point, is that everything is flowing. This is a reality that flows, and everything is coming to you. If you birth that desire, like Abraham says, ask and it is given. It's an automatic thing. The minute that you conceptualize the essence of that thing that you want, it is given, and you are being led into the direction of that. Now, when you resist it, what you're doing is resistance is focus. So if you don't like something, you are resisting it, and what you're really doing is you're focusing on it, and we all know this is an attractive universe, so you get what you focus on. So you just are sort of stalling how things are going because you are thinking that something's wrong, and that's where your attention is rather than your attention being on what's right and allowing. So those are the two things. Go ahead.
I've had a like you birth a desire. I've birthed lots of desires, right? I mean, I've got I still talk about the Ferrari in the garage, right? But if I have conflicting beliefs about that, like, well, to have a Ferrari, I have to make this much money, and to make this much money, I need to be doing this. You know, you stack all your beliefs on top of each other, and if they don't, and you create those beliefs, so you are creating the barriers to whatever it is you birth that desire. So the trick is to come up with a way in your own head to just allow. God, this is going way too deep. I can't do it. Essentially,
you're doing great. Keep going. You're the one defeating your own desire.
You have to be able to ease those beliefs so that it all flows. So that because if you have a conflicting belief, it's not going to happen. Because you are creating your reality based on your beliefs. And if it's conflicting, that can't exist by definition.
Okay. So let's take the example of the Ferrari. You want a Ferrari. How much does a Ferrari cost?
Well, let's pick a low-cost $300,000 one.
Okay. And are you going to pay cash or finance it?
95% of Ferraris are cash.
Okay, so you, though, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to do cash. If I can't pay
cash
for it...
Okay, so you will not finance it no matter what happens.
I will not. That's a belief I have. I will.
Belief number one. You boom, boom, boom. There's only one way you can do it, cash. How are you going to get $300,000 cash?
There's a million ways that can come.
Okay, so how's it going to come? What's the number one way it's going to come?
Someone's going to be listening to this podcast and say, I want to help fulfill Steve's desire for Ferrari and donate it to me.
No, I don't believe that.
Well, that's your limiting belief, Gary. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the heck with it, Gary. Kyle and I are starting a GoFundMe page for Steve.
But even if you got $300,000, Steve, you get $300,000 cash that people – and you can spend on anything you want. Is that what you're going to spend it on?
Well, there would be I would have some beliefs around, like, family members might say, well, maybe that wouldn't be the best use of that money.
Yeah, right? Like, what would your mother say?
Probably that I should be saving for the future. Or maybe,
or giving her the money.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or giving her. Steve, right? You irresponsible son, you.
What about your brother? What would he say?
Well, he's very supportive. He would. But
okay, what about your wife?
She would say, we need to fix our house.
That's right.
Steve, you were a responsible husband, you.
Wow. All the
so
women in my life have
a couple
really
people there that are going to be hard to convince. So now what if you got $1 million?
Oh, that makes it much easier.
So that's one way you could do it, right? If you got $1 million. Okay, for so sure. How do you – first, it's like Steve Martin's joke. How to get $1 million and not pay taxes? Step one, get $1 million.
Okay. So Michael and Kyla, the GoFundMe page is $1 million now.
It's $1 million now.
Right.
Now, is it easier?
As gifts which are not taxable.
There you go. So anyway, that's exactly the point, is that you have these beliefs there that you're limiting yourself. But those are like, you know, these are fun beliefs that can limit yourself. They're not like really limiting yourself to a degree. But imagine if you, you know, were overweight and believed that you couldn't lose the weight. That would, you know, you have those beliefs, and that's where you believe that your body has got a, you know, doesn't metabolize food as it used to, you know, where you've got some kind of condition that you can't lose the weight. Or, you know, whatever. Or even if you are thin and just think you're fat. That's a lot of real serious beliefs that aren't really limiting.
Isn't it interesting, though, that we've learned these beliefs just through living of life. We think they're real. And even though we know through Joshua we can change our beliefs, we still see it as these immovable objects that are just like monolithic. We can't, you know, shift them, but we can.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Well, the funny thing, too, is when you do shift a belief and things change, you feel euphoric.
Yeah.
So it's like evidence that – not only can it be done, but that's what it's here for. That's, you know, you came into life and were influenced by the people around you to adopt these beliefs that you really don't have a firsthand experience with most of them. Most of them were just told to you. And so you don't test the waters to see if in your real experience of things can really work out that way. You know, for some weird reason, you know, a lot of people are in school believing that they have to get educated to get a job because believing that a job is what, you know, is secure. And then they go along this path, and probably most people do it. I was lucky enough to be in a family that no one really had jobs. They just owned their own business or, you know, worked for commissions or something. And I thought that that's the way you did it. Anyway, it never, you know, in our house, a job was something that, you know, was inconceivable. It was, you know, it wasn't – who would have a job? So my brother doesn't have a job. I've never had a job. And my father doesn't have a job. And my mother did her own thing too. So it was pretty interesting. But Then I look at people who are doing really well in their careers, and I wonder, what would that be like to be in this structured environment where you have people above you and below you and side to side, and you're all working just towards something that's not just for you, too. So there's a different way to think of it. But
I grew up in the exact opposite. My dad started working for a company once he finished college and worked there for 40 years until he retired.
Yeah.
I feel probably more like you, Gary, in that I just don't feel like a real job is for me. So I started college and ended up dropping out after like a semester or after a year and a half, and wasn't sure what I was going to do until my mom told me that, you know, you don't have to go back to school. There are other things you can do. And once she gave me that permission, then I decided to go back to school.
That's great.
Yeah.
Then, it's interesting too, because if you're raised in an environment where everyone's getting a job, but then you test doing other things on your own, especially in this economy now, it's so easy to work from home and do things on the computer, and be self-employed. But just testing it and saying, well, that could work, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're like breaking through this belief barrier. I remember when we were doing Light Spa, which was the teeth whitening franchise, we started this company doing teeth whitening, which was a big thing in 2008. And we grew super fast.
Oh, wow. Bad timing.
It was terrible timing. Yeah. This was the fastest growing franchise in the country. And we were just making money hand over fist. And then when the economy collapsed, the first thing to go was teeth whitening. But anyway.
Well, at that point, we're lucky to have teeth.
We had this system that we started out with. It was the only one we knew. And a new system came in, caught one of the guys' attentions, and I was so focused on the first system that I couldn't even believe that the second system would work. But luckily, people convinced me. I went to the offices in Orlando where they made the stuff, and they just were able to demonstrate. It took them literally 2 hours to do it, to show me the difference between the system we were using and their system. And then once we adopted the new system, it was so obviously better. But from where I was with the first system, I couldn't see that because I had this belief that this was the way you do it. And it's so interesting if you can just open up your beliefs and try and look at anything that's coming to you. It's coming to you for a reason, you know? And we tend to reject a lot of stuff. I still do that. Something new comes, and I reject it first, and then I have to go back and look at it. Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting a little bit easier at it. We'll take a look, but.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I think we've all had those experiences, Gary, where something was negative or we perceived as being negative, and it wound up being a much better opportunity for us.
Well, we talked about this, I think, either on last week's show, where the idea of psychedelic drugs has been beaten into all of us that it's a bad thing, but yet until we experience it, you do not know if it's a bad thing or not. But those who don't experience it are the ones saying it's a bad thing, then no one should experience it. Right? But if you would just – if you tried it, you could make up your own mind whether it's right or wrong for you and allow other people to make their own minds of whether it's right or wrong for them too.
And you can go out on the internet. And you can gather evidence to either way, depending on whatever you have a slant. You'll be given proof of that. But
the law of attraction does that.
Right? Yeah.
You know, years ago, I went to the Wharton School as an undergrad when they had a science requirement. So I was not a science guy. They had this wonderful department at the University of Pennsylvania, the History and Sociology of Science. And I wound up in this class, and my final paper in this one class was about the history of LSD. And part of the issue that, part of the reason why people have bad trips or had bad trips on LSD was because it wasn't pure LSD. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it was, because it was illegal or because it was being handed around, one person to the next, people would cut it with all kinds of other stuff, including angel dust, which is not good for you. under any circumstances. So people were having these awful trips and falling into psychoses and other things as a result of the impurities within the actual drug. Apparently, in a controlled environment, it was fine.
Yeah. Same is true of MDMA and obviously marijuana. But if you mix it with other stuff, it makes it worse. But, you know, this war on marijuana, we've been told that marijuana is bad. And now we're realizing that the Nixon administration was trying to crack down on fringe groups, the black rights movement and the anti-war movement. And it was easy to target them for pot smoking because that's what they were doing, and they could attack them that way.
Right. Now having said that, having fumes in your lungs probably still isn't really good for you.
Well, you know, I mean, we can say that, but have we done the science and have we done a double blind and we have read any literature? What are we comparing it to? Edibles and stuff like that. And are we comparing it to alcohol, which is totally available and free? And why would you say it's not good for you? Why would you say it's not good for me? Why are people always saying it's not good for you? Nobody knows what's good for anyone else because we're all doing a unique tour of the planet, right?
And wouldn't it be based on your belief?
It would be based on your belief anyway.
If I thought smoke was good for my lungs, wouldn't my lungs improve after every application?
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly right. Mm-hmm. We are working with higher levels.
I don't know about
here.
That, Steve.
We don't exist. We're fake. We're illusions.
Yeah.
you're not my illusion, Steve. You're
well,
real.
Kind of in a way.
No. Steve, you think Steve exists? He does not.
I think
we are all here for you, Michael.
Well, that's the way it should be. But that's...
You're in a room staring at a computer, and these images come through, and you believe that this is being broadcast out into the world, that other people are hearing it, but this is all going on in your 75-year LSD trip.
Oh my God!
Let's hope you got the pure stuff.
I entered the matrix.
Let's hope this is a good trip. Okay, let's go on to the next one before we ravel our way out of control.
Yes. Pull it back in.
Yep.
You are worthy of all that you want. Your doubt that you are worthy is what causes much of your resistance. Fear and self-doubt are resistant in nature. Love, confidence, and ease are allowing in nature. When you experience self-doubt, you are feeling unworthy. When you experience confidence, you are feeling worthy. Worthy feeling people allow what they want to flow to them. Unworthy feeling people resist it because they fear receiving that which they are not worthy of.
Right. So Steve is resisting the Ferrari because at some level there is a feeling of unworthiness. And this is the basis of all resistance, is that worthiness feeling. So working on the worthiness is probably the best thing that you can do to allow what you want to come.
Steve, damn it, you're worthy.
I know. I know. Actually, it's kind of interesting. It used to be the Ferrari was so much more important, and now it's really becoming less and less important as I'm just enjoying the crap out of my life without it. And I have a Lotus. What the...
Yeah.
I got a Lotus.
For me, I think I've told this story before, but when I got my first Mercedes, brand new, that was an achievement to make me feel worthy. And the first day I had it, I'm feeling super worthy, and I go up to appraise this house, and the realtor's there, and she has the exact same one. I go, oh, what a nice car you have. We got the same car. He goes, oh, yeah, it's so cool. I just paid mine off.
And you're like, yeah.
So less worthy, right? Because I just sold a house and the whole commission paid off the car.
Yeah. But that's the whole point we've talked about before. It's fruitless to compare yourself to somebody else. We all have our own experiences.
And it's fruitless to have this feeling that the car is going to make me feel worthy.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling worthy and attracting whatever I want that's going to make me feel good. I don't need a car to make me feel worthy. And my car reflects nothing on me anymore, and it used to reflect everything on me before.
And it doesn't work.
But it never works. And this was the universe showing me that, okay, you think you feel worthy? No, you don't.
You don't feel worthy at all. We're going to put you in this one situation. We're going to shuttle this appraisal to you. Perfect sign. All right, let's go to the next one.
You may feel worthy. You might consider yourself to be confident. But if you are resisting anything, there is a little unworthiness in there. Remove some of those feelings of unworthiness, and you will begin to allow more to come to you. How do you come to actually know your own worthiness? You adopt a higher perspective on your life.
Okay, so you feel a little bit more worthy when you take the approach to life where you chose to be here, you chose to explore reality, you go in and out of non-physical, you're a non-physical eternal being choosing to live this physical life. That is going to allow you to feel more worthy. Just that one idea. And yes, that everything's here for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. I had a little, adventure today or yesterday with a client. Client's involved in a war with his ex-wife over his son, his autistic son. You know, he's got separate side wars going on. I have been working with counsel for weeks and weeks and weeks. In fact, this has actually been going on for, you know, months and years. And we finally cobbled together something that is very close to a really good settlement. And because his ex-wife triggered him, he was going to nuke the whole thing. And over, you know, what I perceived to be as a lawyer, very stupid issues. And I was livid. I was livid that I was going to have to go back to everybody, you know, and on top of everything else, go back to everybody and say, you know, my client has nuked it. You know, out of the blue, he's nuked it. And, you know, and I was even considering, you know, I was even considering firing him as a client, and he's a client of mine for 6 years. You know, we've had our bumps, but basically I've had a good relationship with him. And, finally, you know, in part because I calmed down somewhat, and in part because my client, took his happy pills and was a little saner when we spoke. You know, I was able to get past some, you know, some of my ego was involved with this. Some of my ego got wrapped up in the, oh my God, he's not doing, you know, we worked so hard here and it's for his son's benefit. And he's completely throwing away, you know, out of pique, he's throwing away something that should be done for his son's, in his son's best interests.
So did you figure out the fear that you had that, like,
you know what? The fear that I had was that I wasn't doing what I perceived to be the right thing.
Right.
You know, that I wasn't doing right for his son, and that I was representing a, in quotes, you know, that the guy who I had considered in general in these wars to be the good guy, you know, suddenly was not being the good guy anymore.
Mm. Well, it was nice that you were there and you could bring him off the ledge, because he was feeling fear and he was reacting in a way that would make him feel better temporarily, but would cause ramifications down the line for everyone. And here you are, the sober one, being able to see that.
Well, I was wishing I wasn't so sober during some of those moments. And I'm not talking about judgment.
Well, okay, well, let's go on.
And that joke went nowhere fast. Okay, very good. I'm feeling very unworthy now.
Well, let's go to the next sentence and you can feel better.
Okay. All right. You are an eternal and limitless being of pure positive love. You are love, Michael. That's who you are. That's who everyone is. You are all part of Source, and Source is pure love. Who you really are is a being of love. Who you are being right now, in your home, in your body, is something less than that. You are moving from who you are right now to who you really are. You are an eternal and limitless being of pure positive love.
And so we're all doing that. I don't want to jump ahead here, but yes, let's go to the next paragraph because it states what I was going to say.
When you transition to the non-physical, you will reemerge as a being of pure positive love. You will return to the fullest and broadest expression of who you really are. You will shed all your fear and regain pure love and acceptance.
So fear is really the thing that keeps us from being who we really are. As the non-physical being, there is no fear. There's no body. There's no way to die. There's nothing that can hurt you. There's just no fear. It doesn't exist. When we come here, we have a survival instinct that causes us to, you know, judge our surroundings to make sure they're safe. So we're constantly judging, we're constantly making sure we're safe, and we're constantly perceiving if something could harm us, and that device of perception is called fear. Well, in survival, that's a fine thing, but in when the fear is irrational, that's what causes problems. So really, who we really are is a fearless being. And right. so to chip away that irrational fear is one thing that will move us closer to who we really are.
So, well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, just real quick. You said causes problems. And I just want to throw in the perspective that we deliberately come here to do this. So it really doesn't cause problems. It causes opportunities because we know all this crap when we're non-physical. We come here and forget it deliberately so we get to rediscover it. And that's the exciting – this is the exhilaration that we are seeking, this journey. So I just want to phrase it as it causes opportunities.
Excellent. Good.
Okay.
You're so enlightened. Yeah. You know what? That's so true, too, that illusion of reality is so strong that mm-hmm. when people do DMT or ayahuasca, they have this clear understanding of what reality is compared to – I've never done it, but this is what I heard. They have a glimpse of what is really going on, and when they come out of it, that fades, and the illusion takes over again. Is that anyone's experience?
Yes. I'm going to be bold.
I have a friend.
I know nothing of this.
Who had an experience once. And it was like feeling God's love for the first time. You know, growing up like in a Southern Baptist home, I had this image of God, this like, you know, judgmental. And for the first time, like, she felt.
You're doing a terrible job.
Yeah, and your friend's initials are KH, right?
Anyway, just
Ken
like.
Ken Heller.
Yeah, felt connected. And then once that experience was over, I only just have sort of a vague memory of it, you know, like I don't have, well, now I'm probably closer to feeling that feeling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember like just trying, like wishing that I could be back there to like feel that again. Anyway,
my oldest friend, Bruce, we met in ninth grade, and in college, my friend, I'm sure I've shared this story before, Brad came over and got to my apartment like at 6 o'clock, and we did acid. It was the first time I ever did it, only time I ever did it. But I remember this overwhelming feeling of love mm-hmm. for Brad. And then when Bruce came in, he was working as a waiter, so he came in like 11 o'clock at night, and I felt this overwhelming feeling of love for Bruce. Bruce is my oldest friend, right? And I can remember the feeling of love that I had for him at that time, but can't replicate it now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Imagine being at a concert with thousands of people and feeling love for thousands of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indescribable.
Wow. So that is the glimpse you get of what it really is. And so I feel the difference between that feeling of love that I had then and how I'm feeling now. Like, it's a little closer, but really that feeling was just overwhelmingly over the top, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that was, but you know, it was good, though.
It was pure positive love.
Sure was.
We have
and acceptance. You know, positive yeah. love really is acceptance.
Right.
I totally accepted Bruce, who has a lot of unique features that can get annoying, right? But I totally accepted him as he was. When we were it was me and Bruce was totally straight. He had no idea we were on anything. And Brad and I were in a little band in high school. And so all the three of us took turns writing lyrics on one song. And so someone would write a line and someone else would write a line. And we still have that song now. And all three of us still remember the song.
Sing it.
Funny.
Let's hear it.
No, I'm not going to. It's terrible. This song is so great. It's like, and then you wake up the next day. Yeah. What were we doing? All right, let's go to the next one.
Okay. In physical reality, your path is one of moving from a fear-based being to a love-based being. You are in the process of moving from fear to love. You have done this many, many times in countless other lives. In this life, you are closer to being who you really are than in any other life. It is a progression from one life to the next. You are becoming more conscious and self-aware. Everyone is on the journey to becoming who they really are. Some are fighting it, and others are progressing with ease and joy.
So, in the future, sometime in the future, we will all be beings living as who we, you know, humans living as who we really are. That would be fun.
Well, this is fun, too. I'm
even this is fun, too. You're so chipper today. You must really feel good.
I am feeling great this week. This is a good week for me.
Someone's found the happy pills.
You know, that's true. When we're okay, so if we are all living as who we really are sometime in the future, all in, you know, love and contentment and allowing, will we look back and go, ooh, wouldn't that have been fun to be in 2016 and have all these fears and limitations, but be able to overcome them, okay. You know?
Okay, we're not, when we're non-physical, that's what we are.
Yeah, that's right. What Joshua says
so
all the time.
Why bother coming? That's why we come here, so to experience stuff we can't experience when we're all lovey-dovey.
Well, we can experience the trees and the breeze and the air and the grass under our feet, and
but you can experience that non-physically.
You can't experience sex. You can't experience eating.
You can. There's. It's a little
well,
different.
Well, not the same way, though.
It's not the same. No,
right, but... it's not the same way. Yeah.
All right.
There's oh, nothing. Yeah. We have to have an episode on non-physical sex. I want that as one of our episodes.
What? Non-physical sex.
Non-physical sex.
Okay. Okay. I had a lot of that when I was a kid.
I don't want to hear about self-love here.
I still do.
Oh, my God.
I have non-physical sex about 30,000, 40,000 times a day. It's all imaginary.
Well, you know what? You know what Woody Allen said about that? That's sex with somebody I love.
Yeah. All right. I love Woody Allen. I could just sit here and say Woody Allen quotes all day long. Okay. What's the next one?
All right. Who you think you are is not who you are. This is due to the structure of physical reality. You have an identity. We call it your persona. Your ego guards against the loss or injury of the persona, just as the survival instinct guards against the loss or injury of the body. The ego tries to protect the persona. It is a survival mechanism.
Yeah, so if you think that you are a smart person and someone asks you a question and you don't know it, you know, you, this is something I do all the time. I go, of course that's the way it is, you know. If you're not really sure, but yeah, so it's that idea of yourself, and if someone attacks that idea, your ego jumps up to try and protect it, but you don't have to protect anything. You know, I think that one thing, if you can get to a place of understanding how this all works, especially about the persona part, you can never be embarrassed again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know? Like Lily, her persona is that she is a very clean person. And so if anyone comes over, and I'm talking anyone, like almost the housekeeper, she has to clean the house first.
That's my wife. She
you know?
Cleans the house first.
Because she doesn't want the housekeeper to think she's not clean. Right? Or the guy who's going to fix the plumbing or her physical therapist or whoever. Only recently has she stopped making the bed when she knows no one's coming over. Mm-hmm. Because that is a waste of time.
That's what I say.
That's such a waste. The way she does it, too, with the pillows and all this stuff, it takes 10 minutes a night just to rip it all off again.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure she gets satisfaction out of seeing a very nice bed. You're discounting that.
Right.
Okay, she gets satisfaction of it.
She does.
Because it reinforces her false persona. Right?
Or she
is that not who she really is?
Well, or she appreciates the beauty behind it.
Yes. That's
what just like you appreciate a beautiful house or creating a beautiful house.
If I say something negative about my wife, That's for me. Okay. Don't jump in and defend her.
That's our job.
That's your job.
Lily, we got your back.
I hope Lily listens to this episode.
Are you sure?
Okay, go ahead.
In the past, long, long ago, one's persona was really very basic, and the ego was not so pronounced. Times were simpler then, and when one lived in a very small and tight-knit community, one's persona was not very fragile, because all knew where they stood in their community. Today, your society is quite large and advanced. You now have opportunities where few existed in historic times. You are not bound by the restraints of a closed society, but are free to explore your world as you please. Never before in the history of your society have so many been offered so many options and opportunities. In this society, your persona becomes quite fragile, and your ego must work hard to protect it.
Right. So this is the idea of allowing your persona to be, to understand that it's this figment of your imagination. It's not a real thing. And to let it be a little bit looser so that people cannot upset you by saying something that you think is wrong. And the reason this is in the diet book is that a lot of people will live more sheltered lives or live in more restrictions because they fear their persona being judged or attacked or whatever. And it causes them to, you know, feel bad and then reach for things to help them feel better, which is often food or drink or sugar or cakes or something like that. But it could also be a cigarette or, you know, a video game or whatever.
All right.
So, Steve, how's your persona now compared to how it was before?
More flexible.
Yeah.
I definitely think that any time you define yourself any way, you're limiting it.
It's your persona is not who you are. It's a limitation.
Yeah.
It's a limited version of who you are.
So I'm trying to be more looser and laugh more when people attack me.
Yeah. So, or say, yeah, you're right. You are. Oh, you had a great story about loading up your mom's van.
What was that?
Oh, how's she? The one that you talked about on the leg call.
The perfect statement she made.
The perfect blow, right?
Yeah.
Where I was
totally attacked your persona.
Totally. Yeah. I don't know if you want me to go into it.
It's yeah, funny. That was a great story.
Okay, so I break down and I'm helping my mom. I'm being a good son.
Right? You're doing something you don't really want to do.
Yeah.
You feel guilt.
And I'm loading up her rental van, the second rental van that I've been loading up, and. I am packing it. I'm playing Tetris. I am putting things in precisely and just stacking them. And I had told her up front that we're not going to have enough space for everything in her house. We're going to have to do two trips. And she didn't believe me. And sure enough, it's almost all the way packed up. And I'm like, okay, we need to make a trip because we're out of room. And she goes, oh, what a coincidence. We're out of room. And her thing is ultimately I was inefficiently packing it
just
so
to
that,
make yourself
so that,
right.
Just yeah. To make myself right. And when that hit me, that hit my limited persona really good. I mean, it was a death blow. But it was so perfect that it allowed me to see in the moment the perfectness of it. And I knew that there's no way that that was an accident. It was meant to be. She was meant to deliver that exact incisive blow. And I was able to stand back and see it and go, oh, my God, this is – and no one could have delivered it. But this – she – I got to tell you how much love I feel for her just because I know how much she must love me because she is my greatest teacher. My ultimate teacher. And if I can withstand that and laugh about something like that, which really hit me hard, I'm invincible. No one's going to knock me off this perch. Give it, come at me, bro. That's what I'm going to say. Tell the world, come at
yeah.
me.
Yeah. And the fact that you could see it in the moment, you know,
yeah.
That's so amazing.
That was.
Yep.
And then the rest of the day went fantastic.
Wow.
That's the really cool thing. Cause you know, there's, If it was any less, I just would have reacted because I wouldn't have saw how perfect, and I would have been the same. it would have been the same messy whatever, and now it's totally shifting. I mean, it's just totally shifting back to love. Back to love.
And I like what Joshua said, that had you been who you really are in that moment, you would have said, oh, maybe you're right. Let me recheck the van again and I'll see if I can move some things around. You know? It wouldn't even be a thing at all.
And it is nothing. It really is.
Yeah,
nothing.
It is nothing,
when you look at it from when you look at it from like, this is who I am. How dare you say I'm not an efficient packer? I mean, really? Really? Is that what I'm all about? I'm an efficient packer?
Right.
Well, and the other victory is you didn't shove your mom in there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. So, yeah, it's like, yeah, right. True. You know, it's funny. The thing, that even isn't even a part of your persona. It's not like you know, it's like my sister-in-law, when she said that she can't trust me because, you know, and I'm like, I've been in real estate for 30 years. I know more about this neighborhood. I own a place in this complex. I know the association, everything. And you think there's someone else who can do better than me?
Right.
Yeah, that's who you are, Dave.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a condo salesman. That's who I am.
Yep. You get that tattooed on your forehead.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the next one.
You see yourself as a success or failure, as intelligent or not, as a good parent, lover, child, friend, employee, boss, etc. You identify with your career, your education, your race and color, your possessions, your mate, etc. Yet none of these things have anything to do with who you really are. They are all part of the persona you have developed and nothing more. They do not represent the real you. They are all aspects of the real you, but are diminished due to irrational fear. Your ego uses irrational fear to protect the persona.
Okay, let's go to the next one.
If you consider yourself to be polite and proper, you would react negatively if someone were to infer that you were being rude. The ego wants to protect your view of yourself. Since you view yourself as polite, being considered rude is an affront against your persona. Your ego instills fear, and you react to that fear by adopting a limiting perspective, and as a result, you feel negative emotion. Since you see yourself in a certain light, you cannot be wrong, for that would jeopardize your persona. So you attack the person who called you rude and make them wrong. This is how many fights are started.
One of my favorite sayings is, how dare you? When you say it ironically. Okay, keep going.
If you recognize that you are a being of pure positive love, not the false edifice of your persona, your ego could not be bruised. If you knew you were a being of love, then nothing could be done to embarrass, anger, or sorrow you. Your ego would fade into the background because it would serve no purpose. When you live as a being of love, you are without fear. Since ego uses fear, your ego would have nothing to use.
Okay, and the last one.
You are not your persona. You are not really who you think you are. You are far more than that. You have far more to offer. You are far more powerful than you think. You are as worthy as any who have ever lived, and you have the ability to access infinite intelligence and leverage the powers of the universe in any way you see fit. You are the creator of your life, and you can adopt complete control over the quality of your life. You are responsible for everything in your reality. There is no fate or luck. It is all created by you. You have all the power.
Well, that is an empowering thing to read.
Yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. It's also, I think, scary. So too. Yeah, that's, you know? I, not in reading this, but I mean, probably a year ago, I started having similar thoughts, like realizing that I was responsible for my own reality. And it was really intimidating at first. And I had to like take stock of everything and realize that, yep, I created that and I created that too.
And the good thing about that is it was the perfect place to bring you where you are, which is mm-hmm. here.
Right.
Could you have imagined this a year ago?
No.
Isn't it funny?
It's hilarious.
For all of us to imagine that we'd be talking, you know, to millions of people every week about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Using my degree that I haven't used since I graduated like 8 years ago.
Yeah. What was your degree?
Electronic media production. So like,
wow.
Oh my God.
What a coincidence.
Funny.
Wow.
I say that jokingly.
Yeah, exactly. That what luck that was.
I know, right? What are the odds? 100%.
I was, I was talking to a coworker yesterday, and I was who I've shared a couple episodes with, which is a big move for me, by the way.
Yeah,
to share that is very big.
But I didn't really fully explain it, so he's like, "Now who's Joshua again?" Yeah. You know, and I'm like, "Oh, it's a group of non-physical beings," and it's like, "What?"
It is a funny thing to think about, but you know, now that I'm in this, I think that it's like the most natural thing. Why would it be anything else? This is just how it's supposed to work, and we're all supposed to be able to communicate. You know, we all have that ability. We all have the ability to see. Well, yeah. I mean, almost all of us, but we all have some senses to do something with. Certainly, we all have the ability to feel. We all have the ability to think, and it's just to recognize that those thoughts are coming from somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Do you use edifice in your daily vernacular?
What's edifice?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even know what edifice means.
Well, it was in – you have it
edifice,
in your answer.
Edifice, schmedifice.
You have Let's it in see. The answer, so I was wondering if Joshua
– Oh, no, There's a lot of things, like that which is – I would never say that.
So when I read that, I'm like, yeah, that has to be Joshua. Gary wouldn't say edifice.
Oh, that's funny. When I'm writing the book, I have to look up words. And go, is that even a word? What does
see,
that mean?
That doesn't make sense because you're getting like thought blocks, I thought. And you're
I know the
you're
word.
You're translating them.
Yeah, I know the word. But there's words you know that you can't remember what they are, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like it's coming out in French. But there's words that you know, that you are have heard in your life somewhere, you know, and they come out. And it's not a lot of words. It's maybe 5 or 6 words a book. But they come out. And every now and then they come out in an answer too.
Cool.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
When we're doing the live Joshua, does that seem different than me or the same as me?
I'd say different.
Yeah. It's the same voice.
You're more
it's
confident.
Not like, it's more confident, yeah. Yeah. And it seems like sometimes it flows more usually too. But I sort of look at it like Esther when she was first translating Abraham, she had this strange accent, which she does not have anymore, which was hard to hear at first.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah.
Have you ever heard Daniel Scranton channel?
Not talking, no.
That is extremely strange. You should just experience that once. It's almost hard to watch.
Yeah, and Story Waters is like really slow and soft. And there's another guy who does it, and what he does is he whispers it and then speaks it. So he'll whisper a sentence and then speak the sentence, and whisper the sentence and speak the sentence.
It seems like they're all unique.
Yeah, they're all unique. Yeah, everyone does it in a different way.
Just like everybody else.
Yeah. Well,
everyone has a different way. You know, everyone has a different level of clarity with their if they're channeling. Mm. You know, just like Gary. You know, Gary. You know, Gary's method or the way Joshua channels through, uses Gary as a channel is different from, say, the way Abraham uses Esther.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
That's different what makes vibration. It interesting.
That's question was asked, can I speak to Joshua? And they are that everyone has the ability to speak to us. The name Joshua is a combination of this intelligence and me. And so that is unique. And what you would get if you were speaking to this group of non-physical entities would be called something different if a name was even necessary.
Because it's going through that person's experience or language.
And that's why the way that I look at Steve, my perception of Steve is influenced by my perception of everything, right? And so that the Steve that I see is completely unique. And no one else sees Steve the way I do. His kids see him differently. His wife sees him differently. His family sees him differently. And he actually acts differently with them too. So he's a completely different person. And the way that Michael sees the three of us as the figment of his imagination.
as his 75-year LSD trip.
Right. Michael, do you ever go and tell anyone about us?
Sometimes. Sometimes.
What does your wife think?
You know what? I don't get too much into it because she thinks any of this is freaky stuff.
That's a big thing. There's not a lot of couples. I'm lucky that me and Lily are really on the same page. But
does she listen to the podcast?
No. She reads all the books. She loves reading everything. Okay. But she's super busy. She's going to love the meditation. I can't wait till that's done. And do some more.
It is. Well, I'll send it to you, but I have finished it. So
you did finish it?
Yes. So
that's really exciting.
I'll see what you think.
Awesome. Good. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. All right, you guys, this has been such a fun conversation.
Yeah.
I hope everyone's having fun listening to the show every week. Please let us know if you are listening to it, and you can make sure you get it by being going to the teachingsofjoshua.com and signing up for the newsletter. It comes out usually a couple days after Saturday. Last week came out Wednesday, but we'll try and firm that up.
And we're back on iTunes now, so they can subscribe.
Back on iTunes. Yes. We're going to be on Stitcher.
Thanks,
that's
Steve.
Great. So I'll have to make links for that. The truth of who you really are was emailed to everyone if you're on the newsletter, but it's also on the homepage too. So make sure you share this with your friends. Why not? I told my brother and sister-in-law about Joshua last weekend. So they were the last people I haven't really told.
And it went well?
Everything went well. Yeah, they didn't want to burn me at the stake or anything. So.
What about your parents?
Oh, my mom and dad are totally into Joshua. So weird,
wow.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Totally into
especially
it.
Especially, I remember what your father did to you that one time over the rent.
My mom is constantly quoting Joshua. So funny.
Wow. Wow. Impressive.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so anyway, have a great week, and we will talk to you all again next Saturday or whenever
right.
we get this.
Okay.
And if you're listening from the future, we don't have self-driving cars yet. There is no Hyperloop, and there's no hoverboards.
I was in a Tesla.
That we know of.
I was in a Tesla this week, hands-free, going down the freeway for miles. It was freaky.
Oh, that is fun.
It's
wow,
freaky.
I can't wait to be in a car where I'm facing the other way. We're sleeping.
You're
going to have something in cars that wakes you up when you get there. All right. So,
or when we've entered the non-physical. Okay.
Okay. We won't go to sleep then. Okay. Good night, everyone.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. Remember, you are loved more than you can imagine, by more than you could ever count. We'll see you next week.